Good evening. This is Life Rattle, the story show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1214, we present three stories from new Life Rattle writer, Leah Jones. Tonight's writer, Leah Jones, was born in 1991, the eldest of three girls. She has lived most of her life near Burford, Ontario, a rural community between Hamilton and London, which, Jones points out, is the proud owner of one traffic light. Jones and her sisters spent their childhood on the farm inherited from their Oma and Opa. Their family grew tomatoes and cucumbers in their greenhouses during the warm months, and spent the winter months operating Christmas and calendar stores across southern Ontario. This combination of small-town values imbued with insight into the consumer industry led Jones to study visual communications and culture, throwing her, thoroughly underprepared, into the big city life. Leah Jones now lives in Oakville with her elementary school sweetheart and her cat. The stories you will hear tonight and next Sunday come from Jones' collection, Small Town Girl Versus the Real World. Her compelling writing, simple and sincere, convincingly portrays the coming of age of a young woman who moves from rural Ontario to attend university in the city. Delivered as a series of firsts: first bus trip, first pub night, first house party, first car accident, first traffic jam, and almost a first tattoo. Below the surface, these stories capture more than the expected trepidation and frustration of that crazy life transition. Tonight's first story unveils more than just how to transfer between two transit systems. Let's listen now as Leah Jones reads her story, The 24, tonight on Life Rattle.
The 24, by Leah Jones. Cars rush by, their glowing taillights streaking past the windows of the 1C. The joints of the bus groan as it turns right, the accordion-like connection twisting as it struggles to hold the two compartments together. A man sneezes. I twist the purple sticky note in my left hand and squeeze my lime-green cell phone in my right. Overhead, blue-toned fluorescent lights flicker. I jump in my seat. The 1C to South Common at 11:24, the 24 to Sheridan at 11:47. I pull apart the crumpled sticky note and check the schedule inked in my messy scrawl, sigh, and squish it back into a ball. I check my phone. 11:21. The 24 to Sheridan at 11:47. In class, Rachel told me the bus would stop at South Common and sit there for a while. I wouldn't even have to pull the yellow cord that runs the length of the bus. I sit far away from that cord. A young man in a white sports jacket moves from his seat in the front car and sits one row behind me. I shift my purse and overnight bag higher up on my shoulder. I squint through the window at street signs that rush by on this October night. The reflective white letters blur together in the glow of headlights. I think of my glasses sitting on the mini-fridge that I used as my nightstand back in residence. The 1C to South Common at 11:24. The 24 to Sheridan at 11:47. The bus stops. A banana yellow sign for no frills stands over a small grassy hill. The bus shifts into gear before I can collect my things. My throat swells and I swallow. The 1C turns right, twisting its compartments around an S-bend and pulling in front of an orange sign mounted atop a steel bar cemented into the sidewalk. I grab my bags and run towards the bus's exit, my hands twisting around the yellow poles. I step out of the double doors and take a deep breath of cold city air. My heart keeps its fluttering pace. The 24 to Sheridan at 11:47. Orange signs line both sides of the terminal, built between a small shopping center and a row of brown office buildings. Three Mississauga Transit buses sit along a row of signs, their engines silent. Two young black men in gray hoodies lean against the glass doors of the shopping center. I look away and rush past them. As I approach the signs, the blurred-out numbers sharpen. 110, 13, 204, 47. I follow the signs to the end of the terminal until my feet fall off the edge of the sidewalk into a parking lot. I freeze and pivot. Where's the 24? I walk back towards my drop-off point. The 1C bus saunters past as I squint carefully at the numbers on each sign in the terminal. No orange sign for the 24. I pull my phone out of my pocket. 11:34. A short, plump driver in his 50s emerges from a heavy door at the side of the shopping center. He pulls out a lighter and lights the cigarette wedged between his crooked, yellowed teeth. Gray smoke mixes with warm breath as they drift out of his cracked lips and into the chilled October night. Gray stubble shadows his chin and upper lip, and his round, porous nose drips clear fluid as he fiddles with his keys. I take a sharp breath and call out to him as he opens the door to a bus sitting idle on the opposite side of the terminal. "Excuse me. Sorry. I'm sorry, but do you know where the stop for the 24 is?" The driver raises a thick eyebrow, the wrinkles in his forehead turning in on themselves. I stutter, "The one to Sheridan?" The driver squeezes out a grunt that turns into a hacking cough and shakes his head. "Okay. Thanks anyway." I force a smile. He waves me off. I shiver and the lump in my throat strangles my sigh. I walk up and down the terminal, checking each sign for a chance that I'd misread one. No luck. I sit on the curb and lean on the sign for the 47 and stare at the grimy pavement. My heartbeat pounds in my ears and my vision blurs as tears cling to my lower lashes. I look up at the murky black sky and blink. "You are not going to cry about this," I think. "You're 19. You can deal with this shit." I wipe away runny mascara with my knuckle and look to the shopping center entrance. One of the black men remains, leaning and looking down at his phone. "You can do this," I think. "You are not racist. You are not one of those assholes from home. You aren't scared because he's different. You're scared because he's a stranger." I push myself off the curb, swing my bags over my shoulder and stride towards the man, shoulders pushed back. "Hi, I was hoping you could help me." He slides his phone into his hood pocket and smiles. His dark eyes twinkle as he chuckles and shakes his head. "You lost?" "Yeah, a little." Is it that obvious?" I ask. "Well, you've been walking back and forth for 15 minutes. His lips crack as his grin widens. "What are you looking for?" "The 24. "Ah, yeah, that's a tricky one. It's on the other side of the terminal, way past everything else. It's Oakville Transit, so the sign's different and hard to see." He smiles and points back towards the terminal entrance. The lump in my throat disappears. "Thank you. Thanks so much." I smile and speed walk to the end of the terminal. Small, navy blue, and sitting in the shadow of a looming maple, a sign bearing a black 24 appears in the darkness.
That was Leah Jones reading her story, The 24. Tonight's second story takes us to a Halloween pub night, peopled with characters more intimidating than their costumes. Let's listen now as Leah Jones reads her story, Base and Alcohol.
Base and Alcohol by Leah Jones. Outside the University of Toronto Mississauga's Blind Duck Pub, I stand among nurses, fairies, cats, soldiers, and axe murderers. We file in line and wait for the busiest night of the year to begin. According to my first-year floor mates, Halloween pub night is the best one and impossible to miss. I tried my best to prove them wrong by sleeping through the ticket sales that Monday. But just after our CCT 100 class Thursday night, Sam knocked at my door waving an extra ticket. He needed to finish his essay due at 10 the next morning. I told him I was okay with not going and to give it to someone else. He insisted. I didn't have a costume, and I was pretty tired. Long day, you know. Anna sent him. Fuck. Okay, I guess I'm going. I stand with Anna, Olivia, Rachel, and Jeanette, five unsexy nerds huddled together in the cold. Zach, Peter, and Ethan complain behind us. Sherry and Nikki, a cat and a devil, stand in front of us in heels and black dresses. I tug on the hem of my red polka-dotted shorts and yank up my knee-high soccer socks. My brain buzzes from the vodka shots we snuck into Jeanette's room. Anna leans towards Jeanette. Oh my God, I'm so drunk, she rasps out, her attempted whisper carrying across the group. You're fine, Anna. They'll let you in. You're the only one of age here. Jeanette smiles. I tighten my ponytail and retuck my blue plaid shirt. Olivia adjusts her suspenders and smooths her brown turtleneck. Anna spins the propeller on Rachel's rainbow beanie, giggling. 20 minutes later, we squeeze through the pub doors. Anna shoots towards the bar, her bouncing blonde pigtails disappearing in a throng of Navy men. Pirates, cops, and dozens of themed hookers stuff the thin pub. A DJ and his sound system sit atop a makeshift stage at the far end of the pub. Jeanette grabs my hands and drags me to the packed dance floor between the stage and the end of the bar. Students grope and grind, the pounding bass and alcohol annihilating all daytime morals. The victims of spilled drinks stick the bottom of my running shoes onto the cement floor. Sherry grabs my hands and dances. I move along with her and look over her head to Olivia. Behind her, a skeleton smirks and winks at me. I drop Sherry's hands and turn away. Anna pushes between two girls, a rum and coke in both hands. She hands off one to Jeanette and drains the second. My phone vibrates against my thigh. I pull it out of my pocket, but Anna grabs it out of my hand before I can read the text. Anna yells something into my ear and drags me to the bar. My eardrum rings. We slide through the same group of guys dressed in white Navy uniforms. Someone grabs my ass. My eyes widen and I start to turn when Anna leans on my shoulder and pulls out a wad of money from her fanny pack. I'm buying you a drink. You're not drunk enough, Anna slurs. I protest, but she waves me off and throws my phone at my chest. You can pay me back later. Anna stumbles towards the bar and I rub my forehead. I pray on the way back she forgets the drink is for me. I lean against a hard black pillar and slip my phone back into my pocket. One of the Navy men, a tall brunette, strides over to me. Hey, pretty lady. He smiles. Hi, I say. How is it going? He leans into me and puts his hand on my back just above my butt. My breath catches in my throat and I look away. Am I making you uncomfortable? The man winks and leans down. The stale smell of beer floats into my face. Yes, I stutter. I have a boyfriend. Really? He says. Well then, where is he? At home. I put my hand to the phone in my pocket. It's his reading week. The officer chuckles and shakes his head. He leans in closer and locks his eyes to mine. If he's not here, he doesn't count. He puts his hands on my hips and slides them under the hem of my top. I push them off. Hey now, he protests. It's his fault for sending you here alone. He never has to know. I place my hand in the middle of his chest and push him away, my heels digging into the floor. I'm leaving now. I tell him. I turn towards the bar, but Anna has left. I rush towards the entrance into the women's washroom. I twist on the tap full blast at the closest sink and rinse my hands. They shake. I dry my hands on my shirt and slowly walk towards the dance floor. The Navy man dances with a bumblebee, one hand on her ass and the other in her hair. I rush past them and curve through the crowd. The music engulfs my ears. I stand on my tiptoes, scan the crowd, and search for the red bandana Zach tied around his head. A hand grabs mine, and I jump, snatching it away and turning to face my attacker. Rachel smiles, face flushed, and waves me towards the southeast corner of the dance floor. I sigh and breathe a deep breath, releasing tension in my muscles. We push through a group of couples pressed together, hands traveling along skimpy seams and tongues attacking tongues. My nose wrinkles and I cough out a laugh. I imagine the embarrassing morning after drudges home, and thank God I wouldn't ever have to experience that. I push past the last pair of horny, drunken dancers and spot Anna, a Navy man wrapped around her back, kissing her neck. Olivia grinds with Peter. Jeanette presses up against a short, blonde pirate. Rachel sways awkwardly with Zach. Sherry pulls a knight's mouth down to hers. Nikki and Ethan disappear. My face flushes red, and my phone buzzes in my pocket. I squint at Scott's text. How's your night going? Do I have to kick some guy's ass for your attention? My face flushes, and my hands shake. I reply, no.
That was Leah Jones reading her story, Based in Alcohol. Our final story tonight is set during the Christmas holiday season, that time of year with so much potential for joy, sorrow, and extraordinary stress. Let's listen now as Leah Jones reads her story, Red and Green.
Red and Green by Leah Jones. The second level of the Caprite parking garage sits almost empty. Dozens of concrete poles guard numbered parking spaces abandoned by commuters for the day. Three sedans wait in their designated spots for the owners to drive off to work. A thick layer of brownish-gray dust coats a once sky-blue Jetta that has sat parked in the same spot for over a year without moving. A motorcycle and a soft-topped Jeep hide under their covers, hibernating for the winter. My deep red Honda Pilot sits in the corner, alone and in desperate need of a bath. Scott and I stroll through the waves of dust formed on the concrete floor of the garage, our chilled pinkies and ring fingers hooked together. My purse bounces against my gray winter parka, and our snow boots echo in the open space. As Scott chats about his morning class, I feel a smile pull at my cheeks. I love December. When I was younger, my parents operated dozens of holiday stores, a seasonal retail business stocked with Christmas decor and board games. Over the years, I sold everything from red and green baubles to Elvisopoly, and our house accumulated 9 Christmas trees decorated to match each room. I love December. Scott and I decide to try Square One for Christmas shopping. We picked a Tuesday during my study break and just after Scott's morning class, when we hoped less people would crowd the Mississauga Mall. I ponder my mental list and pull my keys out of my jacket pocket, dropping Scott's fingers and rounding the dented hood of my truck. "What should I get, Mom?" I ask, double-tapping the pilot's unlocking button on my keychain. We pull the driver and passenger doors open in unison and slide into the cold leather seats. "I don't know. You only have to get her one thing," Scott tells me. "I have no ideas. I do all the shopping for my mom." Amy and Rob are no help. Since his dad left when he was 4, then his stepdad passed away 6 years later, Scott took over buying gifts for his mom as Janice went through boyfriend after boyfriend. Last year, Rob proposed to Janice, but Scott still bought and wrapped all her gifts. He labeled some from Rob, some from Amy, Wyatt, Ben, and James, and some from Santa. For the best ones, Scott signed his own name. As soon as we get there, you'll find lots of stuff, I say. You're a compulsive shopper. Scott wrinkles his nose and sticks his tongue out at me. I roll my eyes and twist my keys in the ignition. Don't worry about that. With that many stores, you'll be fine. To avoid maneuvering around the square concrete pole that usually gives me trouble, I back into an empty spot behind me. Scott slides the end of a thin radio transmitter into my iPod Touch, and Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Jordan croon the chorus of Baby It's Cold Outside. I shift the truck into drive, and Scott adds items to the list on his smartphone when a forest green sedan squeals around the corner and jumps towards my truck just as I step on the gas. My heart pounds. I slam on the brakes. I spin the wheel to the right. Scott calls out. A violent sound grinds. My truck stops. Unharmed, the driver of the green sedan turns, drives around the corner, and creeps up the ramp to the first level of the garage. I feel my heart's beating pressure in my ears. Dust fills the air as tears water my eyelashes. I stare at the faded 172 on the wall of the parking space in front of me. I gently press my foot to the gas. The back passenger side door screams against the cement pole it now curves around. I crank the wheel farther to the right, in reverse. The metal shrieks, tearing into my eardrums. Scott rolls down his window and leans out the window, looking at the pole. "We're stuck," he says. Fitzgerald and Jordan sing the song's last chorus, their final notes echoing through the dusty parking garage.
That was Leah Jones reading her story Red and Green. That concludes Life Rattle number 1214. My name is Lori Callis. I recorded Leah reading her stories. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Actman. Tune into Life Rattle next Sunday night at 9 to hear more new stories written and read by Leah Jones.